Hello, is this thing on? Welcome back to another episode of Energy 101. We have a very special guest today and a good friend of Digital Wildcatters, Lee Payne, the Director of Sales and Marketing for Coldvor. Lee, thanks.
Yeah,
for
thanks
coming.
For having me on. This is great. I've never done a podcast before, so
you're gonna be great.
Yeah. Take it easy on me.
We will. Mm-hmm. So today we are gonna dive into the evolution of data, however you want to say it, specifically data. In completions. Which my very first question is, what does completions mean? Because I do not know.
Now you're gonna put me on the spot, but so it's kind of a just an all-encompassing term for completing the well and getting it ready for production, right?
Got it. Okay.
And so a lot of people, when you think, you know, completions, especially in this space, you know, the biggest product on the block out there is going to be your frac fleet, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Yep.
Cool. So before we get into that, I'd love to know a little bit more about you, what your background's in, how you found Coldvor, all that good stuff. Yeah.
So I had quite a bit of a different journey, I guess, in oil and gas. I went to A&M. I can
missed you on day now.
I did too.
Yeah, giggle. We're a cult. A happy one though. And so I went to A&M and did not quite know what I wanted to do with my life.
Yeah.
I was working at a bank all through college and thought that, hey, this is a good path to go on. So I became a commercial real estate appraiser when I first got out of school.
Wow. Okay.
Great job. Friends with the people I used to work with, got some of my buddies hired on at the company I was there. But it was, I just couldn't see myself doing it for the rest of my life. It was fun, but it didn't really like appeal to me, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So did a hard reset in 08. Worked for a medical supply company in sales while I tried to figure out what I was going to do.
I feel like that's like the go-to for college grads. Like, what do I do? Med sales.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I did it for about a year. And then I got actually hired on as a frac field engineer trainee for Weatherford.
Okay.
And, you know, from like the moment, you know, I started, I was like, okay, this is for me. I truly enjoy this, you know, being in the field, learning everything, you know, I could about frac and then kind of working my way up from field engineer to district engineer to assistant district manager to running the district, I think several times as a interim district manager before they finally said, okay, we want you in Houston.
Gotcha. So where were you? Were you in Midland?
So I was in Alice in South Texas,
okay.
And then San Antonio.
Okay.
I always say we were in San Antonio for exactly 1 year when they moved us. And then they were like, okay, you're going to Houston.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then came back to Houston. I'm from here.
Gotcha.
So it was great. And then stayed with Weatherford until 2019 and left and then wound up at Coldvor. My actual start date with Coldvor was coming up on 4 years, but it was March 2nd, 2020. So right when COVID was... Mm-hmm. Really, you know,
so it's funny you say that because that month is also when Jake, Colin, and Julie went full time with DW as well. March 2020.
I remember it. I think, you know, coming out of COVID, because that's when, you know, started seeing a lot more of their stuff on LinkedIn and Twitter. And I'm not going to disclose my name on Twitter.
We're going to post it. Things. Yeah.
Yeah. No,
we won't. I promise.
Yeah. I don't think anybody wants to see that. And, you know, coming out, I think it was labeled on Twitter and some other things by some of the non, you know, oil and gas folks of that they were hosting a COVID event or something like that. It was pizza and beer here.
Yeah.
At the office. It was like one of the first ones coming out of out of COVID.
Yeah.
And there was probably like 25, 30 of us. And we were all like, what do we do? Like,
right.
We're actually getting to talk to people in person now.
Exactly.
So that's how I really got to meet Colin and Jake and kind of the group.
Well, after that, people kept asking for it. And here we are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was four years later. Great time.
Right.
You know, I think we were all in here and you know, there was no mask. You know, everybody was just like normal. And it was like, man, this is great.
This is nice.
Yeah. And then, of course, I always laugh. The Fort Worth Doug coming out of COVID was y'all had a happy hour.
Oh, yeah,
And that was like, you know, that was when everybody was finally released to go and network again and be friends.
Right, together.
And I was like, man, these people are getting wild at this event just because people were so bottled up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were. I'm sure they were just waiting for the opportunity to get to do it again. So obviously the point of our podcast is to help people who are either like new to oil and gas or energy, or maybe you don't work in oil and gas or energy, but your clients do and you're just looking to learn more. Yep. You coming from a position not in the industry into this training position with Weatherford, did you know anything about oil and gas?
I may have been the best sell I ever did by selling myself in that interview, because I did not know. I didn't come from a family of oil and gas folks.
Right.
I did have a couple of my dad's, one of his buddies had sold a company to Halliburton, I think, or to an oil and gas company. He was giving me some insights. My father-in-law has retired from an oil and gas company.
Gotcha.
From an operator. He, you know, was giving me some insights. And so, you know, we took a flyer, you know, and we were like, yeah, let's just, you know, like, you know, the old adage, like burn the boats. Like we just, you know, got hired and went down to Corpus and, made the best
got
of it.
Got thrown in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I remember going out to my first frac site.
You That's know, the best way to do
I'd
it.
I'd seen pictures.
Just jump right in. Right.
I'd watched videos on YouTube and I'd seen pictures and I got out there and I was like, wow, this is massive. Mm-hmm. But you know, it was really like, I think this industry, you either love it or you don't.
Yeah.
I don't think you can stay in this industry and just have a, you know, mediocre like way of thinking about
right.
it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because like I said, from day one, there wasn't a time where I was like, I've made a huge mistake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think a lot of people probably wake up the first time they wake up at 4:30 in the morning to you know, get to location.
They're like, what did I get myself
long
into?
Day, they're like, oh man, this was, why am I doing this? And I don't think I've ever really had that. Yeah. You know, even during the downturns, I think there were times during the downturn I was like, man, I wish I had a normal job.
Right.
But, you know, that's part of the excitement of it though, too.
Awesome. Love to hear it. Yeah. We're kind of in the same boat. I mean, we're not in as deep as you. We didn't get trained in fracking,
right.
But both of us, you know, didn't come from the industry really before starting here. So it's been really fun to get just to get to know the people and mm-hmm. what all goes into, you know, powering the world. It's insane how big the industry is. It's mm-hmm. nuts. Like, I don't think until you really start learning about it, you understand what all goes into, you know, driving your car up at the gas station and getting gas.
Mm-hmm. You know, and
it's
I think
insane.
That's one of the biggest problems. And I love what, like, you know, Chuck and Colin and Jake and some mm-hmm. of them do is trying to, maybe not Jake and Colin, but Chuck tries to take a softer approach with some of the people who are anti-oil and gas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To try to say, hey, you know, because mm-hmm. I think there's a wish that, because it's almost offensive to us when somebody's
for
like,
sure.
no fossil fuels. And we're like, dude, really?
You're
like,
delusional.
Yeah.
Right.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, you got your cell phone, you got all the stuff that you're, you know, is on your body comes from uh-huh. oil and gas. And so I love the education aspect of it, because I think if people saw more of, you know, the guy getting up, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning mm-hmm. to go, you know, frack a well or go be on a drilling rig, I think that people would kind of humanize that and less vilify maybe.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a good point. So talk to us about the evolution of, do you say data or data? Both.
Data, I guess. I don't know. I'm from you know, Houston, Texas. So
data,
half
data?
The stuff I say probably isn't said
Sounds
properly.
A little weird.
Yeah.
No, it's okay.
I had parents who came from Mississippi and then I grew up in Texas. So, I mean,
gotcha.
It's, you know, tell them what I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm. So where'd we start?
Yeah.
So like I said, I wasn't a tech guy when I came over to Cold War. I mm-hmm. had a frac background, and that's what the team over there was looking for. You know, hired on during COVID, so there wasn't a whole lot of opportunities to be in front of people.
Right.
So spent a lot of time with our dev teams on Zoom calls, because mm-hmm. of course I couldn't go to Calgary.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And learned a little bit. And what appealed to me was, so when I first started, you know, it was kind of the ending of, but you know, to get data from the field, we were having to burn it onto CDs. You know, at one point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you got, you know, some thumb drives that could actually hold all your data files. And you'd have to take that to the office and it'd typically go in a manila envelope because everything was on, you know, on-site servers, on-prem servers.
Yeah.
Couldn't really load anything, all the files on there because they were so large.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those data files would just kind of get lost over the years, right?
Right.
And, you know, when I, you know, even when I moved here and we shut down frack at Weatherford, you know, I would get phone calls from operators that are asking like, hey, do y'all have any data files from a well y'all fracked in like 2014? Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, I don't.
Yeah.
Like, and they were, I was like, what happened to y'all? Well, you know, they got lost on a thumb drive somewhere.
Right.
And
well, thumb drives, which are like typically very small. Like, and I think unless you're right. keeping them in a safe, like how can you ever keep track of
Yeah, and right. You know, you
all
got
of them.
Hundreds of them that yeah. they just get tossed in a drawer. And then who wants to, honestly, with security now, put a thumb drive in your computer and see what's
right,
on?
Right, right. Yeah, you never know.
And so, you know, as I talked with the team over at Cold War and Brett and everybody else, and we looked at what they were doing, and it was very early on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think at the time I was the only U.S. employee.
Oh, everyone else was in Calgary.
Yeah, everybody else was in yeah. Calgary. And there was only mm-hmm. probably, not including our field techs in the field, I think there was less than 10 of us.
Yeah.
Wow. And so, you know, I met Brett when I interviewed with him, and then Shane, our VP, or he's actually our chief revenue officer now, came into town and gave me a laptop and some information, and then got the call that he had to be back on the flight to Calgary. So didn't have a whole lot of chance to learn, but yeah. What was appealing, I guess, from the get-go and learning about the data and everything else was that it was actually now at one spot.
Yeah.
Like you could actually have one data file that was workable for the entire pad. And so everybody's had this kind of chance to kind of evolve with it. And early right. on, a lot of people didn't necessarily understand the need or the why, because they just weren't used to getting that level of data.
Right.
Drilling has had, you know, really good data for a very long time, and, you know, completions and frack and everything else, because you have so many services.
Yeah.
And they're not talking to each other like on a drilling rig. I mean, there's no like central hub to connect to. There was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had, you know, an operator might have a wireline data file. He might have a frag data file. He might have something from pump down.
Yeah.
If they had it, he might have this, that, and the other. And then for that, you know, engineer, you know, working for the operator, trying to figure out, okay, how do I stack this and make this make sense?
Yeah.
Because they weren't looking at it even from a pad perspective, because now you're on a pad and you're operating on four wells or six or however many, as opposed to, hey, we're fracking just one well.
Right.
And so that's where it's been really neat to kind of follow and kind of educate the market, educate our customers and potential customers and stuff on, now that you have this, you can find insights. We can give you insights. We can help you right. like move that data into whatever, you know, resource you want it into in your office. If it's internal databasing,
mm-hmm.
If you just want to have the raw data in one spot, we can house it.
Yep.
You know, we're right next door to them. We're, you know, working with Corva. We're pushing data into Corva now, which a lot of people thought we were competitors.
I remember that. That's so exciting. We love them over there. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're great people. And it's, you know, but that was a perception. You know, we announced yeah. the agreement that we could work together 6-7 months ago.
Yeah.
And it was purely because of that. You know, we right. had a customer that said, hey, you know, can you push your data into Corva? And we're like, I don't see why not.
Yeah.
And so yeah. we sat down and we just started doing that. And then, you know, seeing some of the other, you know, companies that we've been able to work with, you know, and whether we're pulling data or pushing data, you know, to and from, that we've kind of become this kind of central hub of communication, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's really cool. If someone asked you, like, what does Cold War do? What would you say?
So there's a couple ways to different ways to do it. You always have to know your audience, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so like if somebody has a drilling background, you know, it's very similar to, you know, an EDR, electronic drilling recorder.
Okay.
And we call it, you know, the completions or digital completions recorder is kind of what we call, you know, SmartPad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just that central, you know, kind of hub of communication that you can just set it on location and then all your services can plug in. We can bring in all the data.
Yeah.
You can glean insights from all the data because now it's all connected. Mm-hmm. And then in some instances, you know, you can communicate back to the other service company. So you're not just, it's not just one way communication.
That's nice. Mm-hmm.
And what gets really intriguing and interesting on that is, over time, the ability to start automating some of your operations on the completion side.
Right.
That's been kind of the buzzword for a long time is automation.
Oh, gosh, for sure. Yeah. I feel like every event we've done, there's something around automating whatever you possibly can.
Right.
And one of the biggest things is you can't automate if you have incomplete data. Like you can't just assume large, you know, blocks of data and then try to automate off of that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And like, so I always bring this up because, you know, my dad was an airline pilot and I was around, you know, flying and lingo and every stuff all the time. Like you wouldn't want to get on an airplane if the autopilot was assuming just massive blocks of data, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It'd be insanely unsafe. You'd be like, no, right. absolutely not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Same thing do anything on drilling or completions. If you're having to assume stuff, then you're adding elements of unsafe activities to your operation.
Yeah.
And so you have to have that data. And that's what we've spent so much time, you know, working on is how do we get this complete data set, this workable that's mm-hmm. can be delivered, you know, in sub, you know, 1 to 2 seconds.
Right.
That can be in real time, as close to real time as possible. to be able to act on that information.
Right, because who wants to wait around?
Yeah. I mean, you can have a data set, but if you're not getting it till 24, 48 hours later, then you can't actually
make any decisions, right, when you need to.
Yep. And so that's where we've really, really focused our business, you know, from the very beginning, is getting this data set, getting it right, getting a standardized data set. And then working with, you know, it opens up all the doors for the other services too.
Right.
And that's what's really neat of what we're doing really the last 6-7 months with some of the, you know, partnerships, is we've always jokingly called ourselves Sweden. Like we're like the, you know, the third party just stands in the middle and we're friends with everybody. You know, we just want to work with everybody, right?
Right.
And so then, you know, you had the Corvo announcement, you've had the Downing announcement, where we're working with Downing and helping them provide data to their Freedom Series. And so we have all these companies now, and there's more, I hope, that are, you know, going, because these are the conversations we're having. And it's how do you create the best product for the customer, right?
Yeah.
And for the market. And it's very difficult for one company to actually solve every problem that Completions has had in the data and the technology space.
Absolutely.
But if, because you can be a jack of all trades and master of none, right? But if us working with Corvo provides a better product to the end user, then hey, that's a good call.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and it's so refreshing to hear someone, you guys in general, have a company have that perspective on collaboration and looking at it from, you know, we've got to look at what's, like you said, the best for the customer, the best for the market, the best for the industry as a whole. Mm-hmm. And I think 99.9% of the time, the answer is never going to be to just be in your own little silo.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, we say all the time, it's going to take all of us to get where we need to be able to power the world and all the energy we're going to need in the coming years. So I think it does everyone a disservice, any company that is a little resistant to collaborating with people, whether they seem like a competitor or not. I think so many people in companies, their first instinct is to be like, thanks, but no thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think I think part of it is the, you know, just being overly protective of what you do.
Right.
And I think we're at an information, you know, time where I can find out what you're doing by going to Google.
Right.
And I can do enough research to understand it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also people having the trust factor, right? That you're in it because you want to actually build something, you know, a partnership, an agreement, or a package, an offering to the market and the customer that's good, that's beneficial for you and me. And it's not just having your own best interest. It's how does this work? And we've seen a lot of positive reaction to that, because I think it's refreshing. I think
100%.
It used to be very, very siloed. Like, this is my company. This is what I do. Like, you know, iFrac, you just do your wireline. I don't need to talk to you,
right,
whatever. Mm-hmm. And now you're seeing, you know, at least information share on site has gotten better. And like, you're seeing the, you know, when we call somebody now, like when I first started calling service companies to say, hey, we're going to be out there with the operator. And, you know, where can I plug in to get your data? I was initially met with one, like, who are you and why are you doing this? I need to call the operator.
Right.
Or no, I'm good. Like, I don't want to mess with it. I'm like, you don't have to mess with anything. Literally, I'm
like, that
in.
Wasn't the question.
Yeah. Right. To now, you know, people are like, oh, yeah, no, I know. We know you're coming out. This is great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How can we help you? And vice versa, we're like, hey, we can help you too. Like, how can we, you know, what do you need from us?
Yep.
And it's just gotten a lot better. And it makes, you know, when you're on site, it makes it a little bit more pleasant when, you know, there's an air of cooperation.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I feel like some of the episodes we've done and just in talking to other people, I feel like I'm not surprised anymore about hearing about the ways things used to be where people didn't communicate and it wasn't as cohesive, because I feel like looking at it now, my brain is like, why wouldn't you want to make sure everyone is on the same page?
I think it was you know, frac would just operate on one well before they got into zipper fracs and now simul fracs and everything else, right? And I think that you didn't have to necessarily have that level of communication.
Right.
Because I know when I first started, we were like, hey, wireline, just hurry up. We're ready to start pumping again. Get it done. Mm-hmm, like, we're ready to go. And now there's a little bit more, because there's so many moving parts out there. And some of the passengers get more and more complex, right?
Yeah.
That you have to do that. And, you know, I think, you know, what we are working towards is, you know, the more companies that we can say, hey, we work with, the better it is. Right. Mm-hmm. And so now that's the cool thing is there's not too many companies out there that we have not hooked up to yet. And now when I call, it's much easier conversation.
Oh, I bet.
Because they're like, oh, yeah, we've done this. Yeah, we're good.
Yeah, come on out. Yeah. See you there. So I know other than obviously collaboration is a big, big thing for you guys, as is for us. I think from what I've seen, you guys are also really big on community, just like we are. So you guys have the podcast, you do poker nights. So I'd love to hear kind of, I think the whole world knows how we feel about our community, but I'd love to hear your thoughts, how kind of cold bore, what value you guys see in fostering your own community.
Yeah, you know, and it's, so we were, you know, obviously we're getting to be a bigger company, but mm-hmm. we're still a small company compared to a lot.
How many employees do you guys have now?
I mean, it's around the 100 mark probably.
Yeah.
Like that's a good question.
It's a good size.
I should have asked that. and every one of them is great.
Yeah.
No, so the community aspect is, you know, we leaned into it really hard because it's, you know, one, that's just my personality.
Right.
I, you know, never met a stranger. I can walk into a, you know, my wife laughs and everybody laughs because I can walk into a restaurant and know like 10 people by the time we're done.
Right.
Just I'm just going to talk. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so we really leaned into that. We, you know, we got the tech house down here and we wanted to figure out how to utilize it in the best manner. You know, a buddy of mine, he's actually sitting over there. We had kind of lost touch and ran into each other at the airport. Funny story, we were actually hitchhiking in Midland. Not recommended.
Why were you? Yeah. Wait, you have to.
We didn't know we were each on the same flight. Last flight out of Houston, like lands in Midland at like 11. Rental car places are shut down. Trying to catch a, like on a Tuesday night, an Uber or a Lyft at the airport in Midland. Next to impossible. Happened to be sitting next to a guy on the flight, talked to him. Everything seemed good. I was like, hey man, can you just, like he was walking out. I was like, am I dropping us off? And it was a wild ride. I'll tell you that. Didn't know the guy, but we made it safe. But we started, you know, we kind of reconnected, me and John and, you know, told him about the house. He was like, man, y'all should do a poker night. And so that's how the poker thing kind of like began. Mm-hmm. And it's been really good. It's a great opportunity to bring people together, to collaborate, to network.
Yeah.
Have people, you know, whether service companies or operators come by, and it has turned really cool. We actually have it tonight. It's not without some effort.
Yeah.
But now we've got, you know, people that want to come in and sponsor and be a part of it.
Love that.
As well. And so it's
kind
of
grown. Easier.
Yeah, it makes things easier. And so now we've got, you know, Social Octane, Mark and Madison are helping to host because, you know, I'm down here. They're, you know, kind of actively involved now. Justin Overstreet with Wildcat Oil Tool. He kind of said, hey, I want to be a part of this. You know, so great, come on. And then Fletch Azul is our official tequila sponsor.
I love that you guys have a tequila sponsor. Yeah,
I think my bosses were kind of a little like, okay, what are we doing here?
You're like, just go with it.
Right.
But, you know, they're the official tequila of Oil and Gas. So it only makes sense that if I'm having an Oil and Gas 100%. Poker game that, you know, tequila. So Justin and Fletcher are great and bring some tequila. Awesome. So everybody can have a ranch water or whatever.
Love it.
And so it's actually kind of grown. It's kind of gotten funny in that regard. But like when I first told Blair, our CEO, like, hey, I got a tequila sponsor for poker. He kind of like, I hope you know what you're doing.
You're like, I don't, but I think it's going to be good.
Not a clue. Just kind of winging it. But we'll see, you know, and it's turned out great.
Awesome. Because you guys, you have a... What's it called? A tech house? Is that right?
Tech shack, tech house. I forgot what they were calling it. Yeah.
So is that kind of like your office?
Yep. So it's our office. And so when, you know, people are in town from Calgary.
It looks real fun. Yeah, it does.
No, it's wholesome, good networking fun.
Yeah.
And, but people come in, they'll stay there. Like when I'm in Houston, I'll stay at the house, you know, 1 to 2 nights a week, to be able to do different events and, you know, just, you know, and plus, you know, if I go to meetings downtown, it's easier and actually cheaper just to park there in Uber.
Right.
Then to try to find a parking spot downtown.
Yeah. That's so smart. We should get a house. I know. We need. I'm going to put that.
I've been telling Jake and Colin, you know, hey, you should do the house thing.
Get a house. I know. We have our little shack.
Mm-hmm. But I like it. I mean, this is great, though.
I know. It fits us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It fits us.
I still never came over for the pickleball tournament.
Well, our pickleball court was taken over by another office. But
I hate when that happens.
That's okay.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Maybe we'll get it back someday.
But the, so I mean, the house has been great. You know, we've done a lot of neat stuff there and it's just I like it because it's a kind of a, people don't want to go hang out at an office after they leave their office. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like,
I feel like that's kind of what we kind of try to have our vibe here and make it a little more. It's very open. We have our little living room. Like it's a little less office-y.
And that's people, I mean, because they're like, I just sat in an office, I don't want to. But I'll have you know, I've got customers that'll just swing by, they'll, you know, they'll text or call, they're like, hey, you in town? Yep. Oh, cool, I'm coming by the house. And so they'll just swing by the house and you know, they'll wait out traffic.
Yeah.
You know, if there's traffic on I-10, they're just like, man, I'm just gonna come hang out.
We're just gonna
hang. Or, you know, we'll grill steaks.
That's smart.
Done that a lot, just fire up the grill and have people over. And so it's worked out really good. Cause that's, I mean, I'm all about, you know, one, community, networking with people. You know, getting people out. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got Red M,
who's
actually using the house now as kind of their meeting space.
Nice.
So we've opened it up, and so they do all their educational meetings there and stuff.
Awesome. So well, we'll have to come really by. Neat. I don't know if any of the guys have been. I've never been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Jake and Colin and have been over. I think Jake has showed up for a poker just to check it out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Crawfish, I think last year.
Ooh,
Crawfish
Bowl, so. Are you guys going to do that again?
That's the plan. Working on some dates on that. You know, Crawfish is... I don't think the crop is cooperating right now. So we'll see how much crawfish we can actually get our hands on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's my favorite. It's one of my favorite things to cook. And so I cooked last year, and it's one of my favorite kind of events or parties to throw just because it's, you know, it's just a fun gathering. You know,
awesome.
It's a lot different than throwing a brisket on the pit.
Right. Mm-hmm. We did one. I mean, it was before my time, but we did a crawfish like 3 years ago, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did at Chuck's house a couple years ago.
Yeah. So I went to that. Yeah, that was fun.
People have been asking for it again. So maybe I feel like we have so much shit going on this year.
Yeah. But I know.
You never know. Maybe we'll throw one in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was, that was early on.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I think that was.
That was 2020, right?
I think there were still COVID lockdowns. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think because that was another one of the, they said super spreader event.
Of course.
Yeah. You know, and it was Chuck.
It was Chuck. Chuck was probably patient zero.
So, yeah, that was a good time. He shut the street down. Had a band and everything.
I feel like he's like best friends with the Richmond like police department and the fire department.
I think he has to be.
Yeah.
So he is, I will say, I love Chuck. He gives me recommendations on dinner spots.
Oh, yeah.
And then if I can't get a reservation, he can typically call somebody and get me a reservation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he gave me a solid, I can't repeat it, but he gave me a really good recommendation for Uchi Sushi in downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fantastic. And he had to help me out with the res. So appreciate it, Chuck. It was good.
That Chuck is an Uchi fiend.
Mm-hmm. Found that out.
Chuck is an Uchi fiend. Yeah. That's like his favorite place to go. That's like his go-to whenever he's like, I'm going to take him to Uchi. I'm like, why haven't you taken me to Uchi?
Mm-hmm.
I like Uchi.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic. I took Chuck's advice and I was like, he was like, just do this chef tasting.
The omakase, so good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, 10 plates later, I was like, man, this is fantastic until I got the bill. I was like, yikes.
It was pricey.
Yeah, was not expecting that.
But it is good.
It is good.
So before we wrap up, a couple things. I know before we started recording, you were saying you guys kind of have a lot going on this year. What are you most excited about on the Cold Boar side, like going into 2024?
Honestly, just the growth, right?
Yeah.
Like we've
big growth year coming up.
It's a huge growth year coming
up.
We've got a lot of neat stuff coming out as far as partnerships, internal development that, I think we'll have a pretty significant or much clearer partnership announcement in the next few weeks, even. We're launching our V5 of our dashboard, which is going to be really neat. We're going to be showcasing that at HFTC.
What is that? HFTC?
The hydraulic fracturing technology.
Got it. Conference. Is that in the Woodlands?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Knew it.
That's always a great event. We'll see if it's freezing weather this year.
Right.
Again. So we're going to showcase V5 there and really roll it out.
Awesome.
But yeah, I mean, 24 is shaping up to be a massive growth year.
Love it.
You know, the first month of the year has already been really good for us.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're seeing traction in the market that I don't think we've really necessarily seen in years past.
Wow.
I think it's just the market kind of maturing into the way they look at data.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the way they're using it.
Yep.
And saying, okay, now we can actually do something.
Yeah.
And so, 24 is just, we're really excited.
Great. I can't wait to stay in the know and LinkedIn and all that good stuff and see all what you guys are doing.
Yep.
And hopefully there's more. We love you guys.
Yes.
So more opportunity for us. Companies, DW and Cold Boar, to hang out, work together on the good
stuff. Absolutely. That's, I think, we've been apart for a long time with y'all and have participated in quite a few things. So that's definitely going to ramp up.
I feel like we have very similar, vibes, ideologies in terms of collaboration, community, just being a little something different mm-hmm. in the yeah. industry.
And I think that, you know, you have to have that little bit of uniqueness to mm-hmm. it, especially when you're a growing company
yeah.
or you're mm-hmm. new to market, right?
100%, yeah.
Right. Because then you're just another company kind of in the tech space.
Yeah, you get lost in the shuffle.
You get something new, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's been one of the greatest things for us is having that just kind of unique outlook on it. Like whether it's, like you mentioned, community, like working with y'all, kind of being a part of different things
yeah,
and
yeah.
saying, okay, hey, you know, how do we have fun at this?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the biggest deal. You know, we're looking to expand our team, and that's what I always tell like people. It's like there's a culture to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's fun to work with people that you would like to hang out with outside of work.
Yeah.
That you truly like, because mm-hmm. then it makes it fun. You don't want to go to work and just be like, oh my God, right. these people are terrible.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, yeah. who wants to do that, right?
Yeah. Especially, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but we come into the office every day and it would really, really suck
mm-hmm.
if you were sitting in an office every day with people you didn't like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I think the staleness of that is probably leaving the industry and probably not coming back.
Right. Like, yeah. Getting a bad taste in your mouth and just being like, this is not for me.
Right. Yeah. And you're seeing like the evolution of companies too.
Yeah.
And the culture change into mm-hmm. what they do. Like whether it's, you know, I had a boss that, you know, when I was at Weatherford that like, if I was going to a customer's office, I had to wear a suit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had my customer who was like, if you come in wearing a suit, probably not gonna let you in next time. it was like that mindset, right? And yeah. it's a yeah. culture shift now where it's a little bit more casual because people can be more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that.
I know. I always started telling people when we started interviewing people, like when we interviewed Crystal, I emailed her before and I was like, our office is very casual. Please, for your sake, do not show up in a suit. Like right. you will feel weird. Mm-hmm. Like when I interviewed with Colin, he was wearing basketball shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, like I am not a suit person anyway. Mm-hmm. So I just had on like nicer pants and just like a top. Mm-hmm. But I was like, thank God. Mm-hmm. I didn't show up. I mean, I think anyone that does their research will probably be like, these do not seem like suit people.
Right.
But I started telling people, I'm like, please don't. You can wear jeans.
Mm-hmm.
You can honestly wear leggings if you would like, and right. we're not going to judge you for it.
So. Yeah. No, so I went to a meeting with a potential investor last year, and I went to their office, and I was wearing a suit because I'm like, okay, this is what I'm supposed
Here
to do,
we go.
Right? Here we mm-hmm. go. Oh, okay. And the guy's like, dude, I know you don't normally dress like that.
He was wearing
jeans and like a fishing shirt. And
yep.
he was like, come on, man, just dress like I am. And I was like, oh, yeah. dang it. It's like, now I feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, right. And you're just like, you don't ever want to, I don't know what the happy medium is to where you're not under or over.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, culture, we're big on it too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, no, it's been great.
Awesome. Misty, mm-hmm. you want to wrap up with our last two questions?
Uh-oh. Sure. All right, Lee. What is the biggest misconception in energy, in your opinion?
I guess that's a good question. You should have prompted me for this.
They're supposed to be surprised. Right.
No, I think the biggest misconception is that we're not good stewards of the environment.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Whenever you hear people talk about it on the mm-hmm. news, right? It's always, oh, big bad oil. Like one, frat guys cause earthquakes. That we're, you know, poisoning the water. That we're lighting your water on fire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The movie that came out years ago, Gasland, with that idiot. You know, he's pushed a lot of those misconceptions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as an industry, we've done a really good job. We're not there yet, but of regulating and going kind of above and beyond what the government's mandated.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that as a whole, when you go across the industry, there's not this like evil group of people that just want to poison stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've got, you know, my kids, like they watched like Cars 2.
Mm-hmm.
Like the evil guy lived in a offshore drilling rig, you know, offshore platform, right?
Yeah.
That was his lair. And I was like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, this is ridiculous. And right. But that's the, you know, kind of the misconception and everything else is that we don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we do.
Yeah. So. We absolutely do.
Yeah.
Agreed.
For sure. The other one.
Speaking of caring.
Yeah.
So the last question is why people outside the industry, people mm-hmm. like us who are coming in, why should we care? Why is it important to care?
That's a good segue. That's impressive.
Thanks.
So why should we care? Yeah. Or what, say it again.
Why should the general population, the world, mm-hmm. why should they care about energy, where it comes from, anything that has to do with it? Why is it important to just be knowledgeable about energy?
Well, so that you don't make short-sighted decisions. And if you're not knowledgeable, then you're perfectly fine with, you know, shuttering down means of energy production, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, not wanting to embrace natural gas
mm-hmm.
is a huge one, right? Like, you know, our kind of like you know, a guy that we know, obviously, is in the news a lot, Toby Rice.
Yeah.
He's a great steward for talking about the need for natural gas. Mm-hmm. And I think that people who don't care are just allow themselves to not research it, not understand it. And they're like, oh, we can get it from just wind and solar. Well, that's a portion of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
And it's an all kind of everything's on the table approach to how we continue to do this with populations and everything else, right? You know, Colin, I think he did a video yesterday talking about, to fund technology.
Yeah.
You know, how are you going to charge your phones? How are you going to charge your tablets, your laptops? Mm-hmm. You know, how are you going to be able to power your home?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's not going to come from this, you know, one single solution.
No, right.
And I think that, you know, if people really focus on that and they're more open to what we're doing and seeing that that we take steps to prevent. You can't stop every accident from ever happening.
Right.
That's the definition of an accident.
Yeah.
But you mitigate it, you make it to where they're fewer and less impactful. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, people, you know, not caring if they build a pipeline or not. Well, you may not have the ability to heat your home if that pipeline's not there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so it's, you know, they need to actually be active and caring and learning and doing their own research so that they're not just getting pushed in
there's
one single
so
direction.
Much that people don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
And they just, I mean, mainstream media for the most part just buries us
whenever they get the chance. You know, it's easy to kind of be the scapegoat, right?
Yeah.
Like a pipeline leaks. Oh, it's, you know, because they took shortcuts, not because there was any other thing that could have happened.
Right. Well, and that's, I feel like there was a couple, I feel like we talked a little bit about safety on a podcast we did. And I feel like that is definitely one thing people don't understand. The safety measures that are put in place. We're not just out drilling however we want, whenever we want, however we feel like it. To your point, when accidents do happen, it's, I would assume most of the time, not because we necessarily cut corners, because I don't think we do. Like, people can die. Yep. Like, there are very, very strict safety measures in place, but they do happen. And like you said, it's scapegoating. And as soon as it does, there's always someone to blame, and it's usually oil and gas.
And what we do is, I mean, what we do, the guys in the field and the girls in the field is, I mean, it is dangerous.
Yeah.
But it's, and that's one of the things that's kind of appealing too, is you sometimes stretch the limits of engineering.
Yeah.
And they have to relook at it and say, okay, we have to get this done. So how can we redesign to build this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's, the people who can recreate are staving off those next accidents and making it safer for everybody. And so, you know, it's, but the lack of caring is also impacting the ability to expand the industry.
Right.
You know, it's getting more difficult to hire some of the younger kids that are coming out of college because they have this kind of mindset of what they've been around by not doing research that, oh, oil and gas is, that's stale.
Yeah.
Or anything but.
Yeah.
There's a good group that I'm kind of getting associated with. A buddy of mine, Brian, he's doing a group that's trying to help kids that want to go to vocational school in high school and push and not go straight to college, go to a trade school. And then he's introducing them to oil companies.
Love that.
And getting them involved early so that they can help sculpt, you know, their talents.
That's one of Colin's big things too. Like,
I need
as
to
a
get
company,
them together.
Yeah, as a company, and I think Colin in general too, just how important it is to kind of repaint the picture so that there are younger generations that aren't afraid to get into energy and to get into oil and gas, especially here in Houston. Like, there's no reason that schools in Houston and Texas in general shouldn't be offering or teaching some basic level of energy.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's and what they're doing through this is they give scholarships to some of the kids to go to vocational school. They earn a scholarship and then they mentor them throughout it.
Yeah.
And then make introductions to oil and gas companies, service companies, and say, hey, we're vouching for this 20-year-old kid. Yeah. Give him a chance. Right. You don't have to have 10 years experience. You can train him.
Yeah.
And that's, but that's how it has to happen, because there's a lot of kids aren't going to the oil and gas direction anymore. And that's where we're going to be put in a really bad bind in the next 10, 15 years. You know, they talked in the 80s, what was it, the great changeover?
Yep.
Because, you know, a lot of people weren't going to petroleum degrees anymore.
Yep.
You know, it's going to be, I think it has the potential to be worse over the next 10, 15. So.
Well, thank God for companies that are taking, you know, taking a stand and putting in a concentrated effort to change that.
Right? Yeah. And it's the technologies too, right?
For sure.
Now it's,
it is becoming way more techy.
It's more cool to be
on
the tech side of things in oil and gas. And it was before where everybody was like, no, we've always done it this way.
Yeah.
It's a horrible way to think. Right. We've always done it this way. We don't need to change.
Right.
I've got my tally book. I don't need this.
Yeah.
And that was all way of thinking. And it's
yeah, way cooler now.
Yeah. Now you can build cool stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. See, our industry is cool.
It's so cool.
Have you ever seen Halloween Town, the Disney movie? Mm-hmm. Where she's like, Halloween is cool. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm like, oil and gas is cool.
It's cool.
It is cool. It's a very, I mean, it's not that old, but that old Disney Halloween movie.
Yeah.
But
look it up.
Look it up. It is a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Write that down.
Yeah. Good year round. Mm-hmm. Lee, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thanks. Y'all were nice.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah. Yes. No, it was awesome. Y'all
painless.
Didn't beat me up too bad. And,
good.
Yeah. You know, hopefully when y'all edit it, y'all don't edit to make me sound really dumb.
We won't. Jacob does a great job.
Yeah, he does.
All right, y'all. We will see you next time.